Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 6th of September 2015. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Phil from the West End Whingers, and Web Cowgirl. We're now going to talk about the Oresteia at Shakespeare's Globe. This is different from Oresteia, which was done by the Almeida and is currently on at the Trafalgar Studios, done at the Almeida earlier this year. This production has been adapted by Rory Malarkey, directed by Adele Thomas, designed by Hannah Clark, and with music composed by Mira Kalix. I have a feeling that some of the actors were actually wearing loudspeakers, so we got moving sounds. It was really quite effective, some of the music in this, I have to say. It stars Katie Stevens as Clytemnestra, George Irving as Agamemnon and Apollo, Nana Aguiar-Ampadu as Cassandra, and Joel McCormack as Orestes. What Rory Malarkey has done is taken the three plays of the Oresteia, which are, I think, Agamemnon, the Libation Bearers, and the Furies, and has compressed them. I'm not entirely sure he's compressed all of them. I think he's compressed two of them and left one fairly intact. It is quite a long evening. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
My first sort of impression, I'm going into the Globe really, was that it shares a lot of features with Greek theatres, Greek amphitheatres, and I felt that it proved itself to be a very good home for Greek tragedy, because it's got that kind of arc, albeit, you know, different. It's not sort of so open, but it's got that arc shape, and it's open to the elements, so actors playing mortals look up to the sky when they speak to the gods. And in this particular production, they've created kind of temple steps from the stage right down into the groundling space for the whole width of the stage. So I thought that there was a very effective setting for Greek tragedy. But the second thing that struck me was how different it was from the Almeida's take on this, which I only saw 3 months ago. So only 3 months between the two, which is pretty astonishing that we have two 2,500-year-old Greek trilogies in London at the same time, given that I think we haven't had Oresteia or the Oresteia since Peter Hall's production 30 or more years ago. But I might be wrong on that. But what Rory Malarkey has done is taken exactly the same starting point, but produced something I think quite different. And as you said, I think the biggest difference for me is that he seems to have edited the third play most, the second play next, and the first play not very much at all. And that for me made it a bit uneven, because I felt that there was kind of too much in the first play, particularly before Agamemnon even arrives back from the Trojan Wars. And I felt that sort of imbalanced the evening a little bit. And stylistically, they all seemed quite different as well. In the first play, the chorus also seemed to take on individual unnamed roles and are effectively the sort of playing the citizens of the city. And we're only with the chorus for quite a long time before Agamemnon comes on and we then plunge into the heart of the play. And what he does is use the chorus to kind of fill in the backstory of the sacrifice of Iphigenia, which at the Almeida, they actually kind of did as a prequel. So they actually sort of went backwards a bit and actually started before Aeschylus starts the trilogy. So the chorus was like that in the first play. In the second play, it was a bit different. And at one point, they very effectively, I thought, wore these masks that were kind of three faces. So it was more of a chorus, more of what you expect of a chorus in Greek tragedy in the second play. And then in the third play, of course, we have the Furies. And I thought that was a terrific creation, because they presented them as kind of as sort of gothic creatures, kind of quite childlike and a bit hysterical. And I thought that was really effective. I thought the chorus Furies were particularly effective in the third play. In terms of acting, I thought that Katie Stevens was terrific as Clytemnestra. I mean, she was, her revenge, her intent on revenge was palpable, and she was a woman possessed in the way she put it over. And I really liked Trevor Fox as her cousin stroke lover, Aegisthus, who sort of comes over, he plays him as a real louche and a real kind of user, which I thought was good. And indeed, when we see Orestes in the second play, I think that's a very passionate performance by Joel McCormack. The other thing about the second play for me is, particularly, you know, comparing it with the Almeida, is that Electra is really quite a minor character in the second play. And I felt he'd sort of pushed her to the background perhaps a little too much, because I think her encouragement of Orestes and the way after they are reunited. You know, the way that relationship unfolds as both of them wanting revenge, I think was played down perhaps a little bit too much. And I felt the final scene, and the final play rather, didn't debate enough the issues. It seemed to sort of almost go from bringing on the jury, as it were, which incidentally were local people from the area, local area, which I thought was a very good idea. And almost straight to the decision. There wasn't much debate. I mean, there was some advocacy by Apollo, but there wasn't much debate going on. And I felt that that third play was actually short. So I think, if you know, I would say, I think the first play should be reduced in size and the last play increased in size, and the middle one's about right. And stylistically, I think even though that made it a much lighter evening, it wasn't as earnest and as cold and clinical. I mean, I'm not saying that in a negative way about the Almeida production, because I liked it very much. But it did kind of mean that it didn't hang together. It wasn't as cohesive as a sort of whole evening, in the same way as the Almeida was a very cohesive, a very lucid kind of complete evening, really. But, you know, I enjoyed both of them, but in very different ways, really. But I think, for me, and I don't think I've seen Greek tragedy at the Globe. I don't know whether the Globe has done Greek tragedy before. I know we've had plays set in Greece, like Helen, but I don't think they've done 2,500-year-old play, as it were. I do think the space is very suitable for that. So what did you think, Tim?
I was going to say that this is the definite article rather than the Almeida one, but no, I'm not sure that it is entirely. Although he is, as you said, it's much more conventional to the way that you do a Greek tragedy. And I think it is the first one that they've done properly as a Greek tragedy rather than try to adapt it in any way. Although this is an adaptation, it is keeping the conventions of Greek drama, having the idea of a chorus. The setting that they do here, there was a sort of an interesting idea of it being possibly the early 1960s. Certainly the chorus's costumes could easily have been sort of any time from about the 1940s right through to the 1950s, right through to the 1960s. But Katie Stevens came on, and I thought, is she pretending to be Elizabeth Taylor because of the extreme eye makeup and the dress? And I felt it was very much that kind of look that they were wanting for her. And you do get the occasional other character coming on with beehive hairdos, and you also have you have some very Fidel Sassoon-looking haircuts on a couple of the supernumeraries. I was quite impressed by the look. I was also, as I think I said at the beginning, I was fairly impressed by the music and the way that they managed to get it to move around the auditorium. I'm not entirely sure how they did that. I couldn't see any speakers, but you could just put basically a very small radio in somebody's pocket and it would move around the place with them. And I think that's how they did it. And again, back to the 1960s feel, or the late 50s feel, the music in parts incorporated rather strange synthesized sound effects, which is very reminiscent of some films of the time, especially if you're doing science fiction films or fantasy films in some way. I found it an impressive evening. It is a very long evening. I mean, he's taken three two-hour plays, essentially, and compressed them into three. I think it was about 3.5 hours when we saw it. And it felt a very long evening, and you felt that it was... I felt the second two plays, I mean, certainly the last play, that was immensely rushed. And like you, I felt that the first one went on for a bit too long. But it did work quite well. I mean, it is such a different beast from Oresteia, the Almeida one, that you can't really compare it. Just going back on the Oresteia being done before, of course there was the famous National Theatre production done in the 1980s, which is actually the first thing I ever saw at the National Theatre. But Ted Hughes as an adapter and Katie Mitchell as director did a two-part version of the Oresteia in the Cottesloe Theatre in 1999. They basically took the three plays and made them two plays under the titles of Oresteia, The Home Guard, and The Daughters of Darkness. There were parts of the play I didn't like. I didn't really like when the chorus started getting a bit histrionic and bashing themselves or bashing themselves into the set. I felt that was going a little bit over the top, but I think most other people were enjoying it. But I did feel that, you know, you take a step back and you end up with people laughing at it. And I did feel sometimes that they were verging a little bit on the ridiculous, which I thought was a pity, because I thought it diminished the play. Because I think that overall this is a pretty strong adaptation of the play. I mean, I definitely hope that they're going to do more Greek tragedy. One of the interesting things about this particular sequence of plays is that they have versions elsewhere. I mean, essentially, the middle play, which we have of the Oresteia, was done by, I can't remember which one it was, but was done as the play Electra. And we had an Electra last year, at the end of last year, and it basically, the Libation Bearers, which is the middle play, tells the same story as Electra. And there's supposed to be a fourth part of the Oresteia, which is telling the story of Menelaus and what happens to him. And there is a Greek play called Helen, which deals with what happens to Menelaus. Now, the Oresteia version would have just been a satyr comedy, which explains what happens right at the end of this particular production. Basically, a satyr play has people running around and lots of penises. So, shall we just say they echo that in a way? And if you don't understand it, you might wonder why it's happening. That is, this is something that he mentions, that there is this lost fourth part, and I think that that's what they were trying to do at the end there, because it wasn't really explained. It would be interesting to see some of the other plays. I mean, you've certainly got the canonical ones. I mean, we're just about to get another Medea. You've got Electra, of course. So there are lots of Greek plays that could be done very well and almost in full Greek style at the Globe, and it would be very interesting to see some of those. But I would like to put in a vote for Helen, the, I think it's Euripides play about Menelaus finding Helen on an island or in an Egyptian temple, which is a nice alternate story to the whole story of Troy.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, because a lot of other Greek tragedians, you know, do present things differently. So Electra by Euripides, which is the one we are most used to seeing, places Electra right, I mean, it's the same story as we're getting in the middle play here, but it places Electra right in the foreground and names the play after the character. And of course, in this one, Electra, I felt, in the other versions of this, I felt Electra and Orestes were equally important characters, but I think here she's pushed much more into the background. I think that the music is very important here, and it's kind of a modern jazz sound, and it's done almost like a soundscape. It's more of a soundscape than it is music, I think. So it's kind of like you'd have incidental music in TV programs or films, and I think it's particularly effective. I thought that was very, very good indeed. The one thing I didn't like was, of course, the murders are off stage, as I think they always are in Greek tragedy, but then Clytemnestra in the first play and Orestes in the second play bring on the bodies, but the budget obviously didn't stretch to having two bodies, because it was I think the same mass of flesh and blood at both occasions.
We're now going to talk about Our Country's Good by Timberlake Wurtenbecker. This is a play based on Thomas Keneally's novel The Playmaker, which was about the first play done in Australia shortly after they brought the first load of convicts there. It was done as a companion piece in the late 80s, I think 88. It was done as a companion piece at the Royal Court to The Recruiting Officer. And it was, for quite a while afterwards, toured in that way. Max Stafford Clarke has been taking this play around an awful lot. I think I saw it in 88 at the Royal Court and 89 at the Royal Court, and then in 1998 at the Young Vic. So it's been going around a lot as sort of almost the property of Max Stafford Clarke. And I think this might be the first time we've had a major production of it in this country that's been directed by somebody else. This is been directed by Nadia Fall and has designed by Peter McIntosh, and they're making a big fuss of it, so I'll say it, and music by Keris Matthews. But unlike normal the productions that Max Stafford Clarke does, and as it was done originally, it was done with a lot of doubling. So basically everybody who played a naval or marine officer as part of the establishment would also play one of the convicts taking part. So you would have a large crossover there between the actors. Now, what this has done is it's taken... There is still a little bit of doubling in places, but only sort of very minor roles between the officers and the men. But they have allowed an awful lot of characters to be on their own among the cast, because there's a hell of a cast in this, and it's a really well assembled cast. We have Jason Hughes as Ralph Clarke, who is the man who is trying to make the play. We have Keelan Dunn as Mary Brennan, who is a special person in the play for him, one of the convicts. We have Jonathan Coote, Matthew Cottle, Peter Forbes, Paul Kay, Shalisha James Davis, Jonathan Livingston, Ashley Maguire, Jodie McNee, David Mara, Cyril Nri, and Lee Ross. I've probably missed various people out, but it's really quite a good, strong cast for this play, and it's they've really opened it out with a very big cast on one of the largest stages. Phil, tell me more about this production, what you thought of it.
Well, I saw the original production after it transferred to the West End and remembered it as being very entertaining and quite funny. And I think, on the whole, this production is as well. I don't think it's got quite as much humour as I remembered, but it still does wrestle some humour out of some scenes, because it's a pretty grim story, particularly the rehearsal scenes, which I think are very entertaining. It opens with the ship rising up and seeing them all crammed underneath, and you think, God, they spent 8.5 months getting to Australia. It must have been absolute hell, and it's pretty hell when they get there. But it is a good cast. I particularly like Keelan Dunn as Mary Brennan and Jodie McNee's Liz Morden. I found her quite irritating at first, but I warmed to her. She's meant to be irritating, but I warmed to her as it went on. And then she suffered so much and rather brilliantly. And there's also a character called Shitty Meg, which kind of stays with you somewhat. I think that Keris Matthews' music, which, and as you say, quite a lot's been made about that, because it's the first time she's written for the theatre, was rather good. But I did find that actually that did slow it down at times, having sort of singing scenes and bringing on people to sing, but I didn't mind that too much. It's quite compelling, the story. You do kind of get behind the characters, I think, and their plight. And I think that the awfulness of the situation is played as well as it can be, and it was probably damn sight worse than we see it. It's quite long. I thought it was a little bit long, a little bit sluggish at times, but on the whole, I felt that it does sort of do the sort of, it show the redemptive power of art, which is sort of hammered home a little bit, but, fair enough. It's a strong story, so you go with it.
Gareth?
I enjoyed it very much. I did see the original Royal Court production together with The Recruiting Officer. I think the idea of doing the two together is a terrific idea. It's a pity we can't see that again, in a way. But I also saw the touring version, the much smaller scale touring version that Max Stafford-Clark did about 2 or 3 years ago, which turned up at the St. James's Theatre, which I also enjoyed very much. And, of course, at that time, the imperative was that it had become a set text in school. So it was sort of almost guaranteed an audience as a result of that, which could be why you revived it at that point in time. But this production, for me, betters the others, notwithstanding we don't see it with The Recruiting Officer, for two reasons. One is, I think, scaling it up to the Olivier stage really works. Because as Phil says, you can create those wonderful effects with the drum and the revolve of the ship coming and moving. And I think that, the Olivier is really used to its best effect, but, without a big spend, as it were, for this play. And the drum and revolve, I think, are used particularly well. And I think the second thing for me is Keris Matthews' music, because the play doesn't normally have music, and I think it benefits from music. And I thought the kind of folk blues, kind of melancholic style of music that she had was really fitting to the piece. And I loved some of the songs, which were beautifully sung, I thought were absolutely lovely. The music really added something to this, and I think it's part of the reason why it's the best of the three productions I've certainly been to. It is a darker interpretation, I think, of Our Country's Good, which Phil touched on. It doesn't seem as light as the ones I remember. And in particular, the brutality of the officers to the prisoners, I thought was much more in this particular interpretation. And Peter Forbes and David Mara, in particular, I felt, they just had me on edge. I mean, whenever they were doing this, I was repulsed by what they were doing. It was, which I think is quite a tribute to their acting. And so I think that's kind of played up. It's more brutal than I've seen it before. And I think the other thing I felt about, I saw it on Friday, the end of a week where we'd been immersed in the refugee crisis. And I was kind of looking at this, this inhumanity of 200 years ago and kind of thinking, inhumanity goes on today, really. And the debate about punishment versus rehabilitation continues as well, today. So I felt it somehow resonated with me more this week or this year or whatever. And I felt, despite it something set in that time, I felt it still said things to us now. Amongst the performances, I mean, you mentioned Jodie McNee, who I thought was terrific. I think Lee Ross is excellent as this kind of obsequious sideway. I thought he really shone in it. And Ashley Maguire, you know, she plays a very determined, very defiant character called Bryant. We saw and loved her as Falstaff in the Don Mars Henry V. And I think this is another excellent performance by her here as well. Really. So I thought this was the best of the productions I'd seen. I agree, a touch long. I think particularly in the sort of first part of it, I think it could have been speeded up a little bit. But I think it just looks so evocative. The backdrop is a kind of orange, red, brown painting, you know, which is clearly inspired by Aboriginal art. And then you've got this lone Aboriginal who is kind of almost ever present, who's kind of looking on with curiosity and disbelief and disdain at what's kind of happening in his country, as it were. So I wasn't going to go because it's only a couple of years, but for some reason I did decide to do it. And I was so glad I did, because I think they've looked at this play afresh and put it onto the Olivier stage. It belongs, it seems to me, on that stage. And I think it's a great revival.
Was I right in hearing the words rantum scantum in it, which I thought was quite interesting because I'd never heard the expression before until earlier that week when I saw The Scandalous Lady W on television, which is set in almost exactly the same period, which they used quite a few times in that. And I'm sure I heard it used in this, which is interesting because I'd never heard the expression before, which is for copulating, if anybody doesn't know it.
I saw The Scandalous Lady W and this, but I don't remember the expression in either. You're much more observant than I am, Phil.
I'm sure I heard it. It's just sort of, I'm thinking it should be a revival. It's rather a good expression.
You're more observant of euphemisms for copulation, if nothing else.
I came to a conclusion that I don't really like this play, having seen this. I'm not interested in it. I think that it's never been the one I've been interested in. I've always been more interested when it was paired with the recruiting officer, in seeing the recruiting officer. I actually only saw the recruiting officer, and that was back in 1988, and didn't bother with Our Country's Good. And I've never really... although I think it's a very interesting premise and the pairing is very clever and there's all sorts of... I think it's a very well-written play. I just don't really like it. And this production kind of cemented that. I mean, although it's very strong, it's got a wonderful cast. I'd agree about Ashley Maguire, and I always like seeing Lee Ross in things. I think he's a sort of one of these underrated... He's slightly underrated actor, and although he's always... in a lot, but he's always a good presence in things. I think that there was just something about it. I think it may be, as you said, that both of you said that they've sort of reduced the comedy and the joy in it. And I just ended up not really liking the play. I can see that it's good and I can see that this production is well done, but I think I was right sort of 27 years ago, however long it was, when I thought, well, I don't think I'll bother with this play. And yeah, I haven't really come to love this play, and it's possibly a pity.
It's odd because I've come to love it more. It's kind of grown on me over the years. And I think it's Timberlake working Wurtenbaker's best play. And I would go and see it again in the future. I think it is a good play. And it's a play about a slice of history we don't really hear much about. And I think and that makes it important as well for me, really. I mean, it could be for me that it's sort of... This year I went to visit some of those penal colonies when I was in Australia. So it's possible that it's, you know, I'm particularly well positioned for seeing it at the minute because that's a recent experience. But I do think it is a very good play, and I can understand why it's sort of ended up in one of those classics on the school syllabus, really. So we'll have to agree to differ on that one.
We're now going to talk about Our House, which is on at the Union Theatre. This is a musical with a book by Tim Firth, and of course music and lyrics, as you might guess, by Madness. It is directed here by, I believe, Michael Bergen, who also directed Loserville. Phil, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, I saw the original production of this at Cambridge, which I think was 2002, and absolutely loved it because the songs, the Madness back catalogue, is so good. I don't think I really appreciated it at the time. I mean, the Madness when they at the time, I sort of, they were always incredibly catchy, but they fit into the story, I think, rather well. There's a few that are sort of shoehorned in, but on the whole, they fit them into this rather clever story. It's sort of a sliding doors type story where a guy, Joe Casey, on his 16th birthday, breaks into a house and he makes the decision to Scarpa and leave his girlfriend behind, and then is sort of the bad Joe. But then we see the good Joe, who actually goes to prison for it, and but stays true to his girlfriend. And you get the two parallel stories running along, one of which ends very, very darkly. And it's always quite clear which story you're watching, because good Joe wears white, bad Joe wears black. And apart from a few things at the end where we got a little bit lost about the deed, something to do with the deeds of the house, because bad Joe is trying to get his mum out of her house in Camden, and good Joe is sort of stays sort of true to his mother. Did get a little bit lost there. I think the slight problem in the Union is that it's such a sort of small space, and it's staged with the audience on three sides. So there's a few problems with sight lines occasionally. When they do driving in our car, the car sort of turned around, so we're watching sort of from the back of the car. And also when they do the switches between the two Joes, that was quite obscured for us. So again, traverse staging just doesn't work for me. And I remember in the original production, they did some really clever illusions with the switches of the Joe, which you aren't going to get in a sort of a fringe show. But the cast are great. I mean, there's a real enthusiasm, and the songs are delivered on the whole really very well. Stephen France, who plays Joe, is very good. Ailsa Davidson as his girlfriend's excellent as well. You do have to sort of lean back as they are dancing, because they are incredibly close to you, but they really pack in some pretty impressive choreography into a very tiny space. So on the whole, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's the songs. The songs are terrific.
Well, meanwhile, over here, it's like I'm hearing you talk about a completely different show from the one that I went to see. I like Madness, and I was really excited about finally getting a chance to see this show. But, you know, I didn't have the full appreciation of their back catalog, because while I had one or two, let's say it, 45s in my collection, I didn't have a Madness album. But I thought they were very unique and exciting band from that era, and I thought doing a musical with their songs propelling it was a really fantastic idea. I unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to see this show the first time it came around. So unfortunately for me, the split story in the show with Good Joe and Bad Joe didn't happen as clearly. And I probably spent 45 minutes not entirely understanding what the two different what was going on with these two different storylines. I thought maybe this, you know, there was an imaginary version of his life. There was a version of his life he was telling his dad about. I couldn't figure out which was supposed to be real and which it didn't make any sense to me. And I found the costume changes actually too subtle for me to follow along with, because I was attempting to make all of it make sense within the same narrative. So I was thinking that he was actually living one life while telling the story of the other life as being, you know, what he wished he had done. But that only one of them was real, but I didn't know which one was real. And I quite literally, and I've never actually, now that I say the words, lost the plot. I really wasn't able to follow along, and I felt pretty stupid. But I was, on the other hand, I did have a very good time with the music, and I was impressed by how dynamic the dancing was. And, you know, I love being jammed into a tiny little theater and having like 16 singers and dancers just going wild in front of you, you know, as you sort of shuffle your feet backwards 1 or 2 inches because you think they're going to run you over as they go dashing back and forth. So that was really good. And if you were a Madness fan, I'd say just for the excitement of seeing the songs come to life, it would probably be worth seeing the show. However, I wasn't finding the integration of the songs and the story really working for me. And it's a problem that I see with jukebox musicals, which I think this is one of, where it feels like the need to fit existing songs into is driving the plot more than actually having a story flow and going from one point to the next. It's like, well, we have to call it our house and make it about a house because that's the song that we have, as opposed to I have a really great story, I'm going to bring this to life, and here's a song that will illustrate it. Having song-driven plot lines as opposed to musically illustrated plot lines is not fulfilling to me. And I found myself ending the night disappointed and, of course, extremely frustrated. I can't blame it on the cast. Can't blame it on the choreographer, but for me, I'm actually just going to blame it on the playwright. I think there may be an opportunity in the future to take these songs and do a different story, because this one just didn't work for me.
I actually think that the title itself is quite clever, to take that song as the title and make it about the house, you know, because that is a major point of the plot. And I just think that's a very neat idea. So I disagree with you on that. And there were moments in some of the songs where the lines, for instance, when he mentions his father, and it's actually a father, as in a religious father rather than his father. I just thought there's some quite neat things in it, I think.
I actually thought the concept of the plot about redevelopment in London and about how it's displacing, you know, the people who were there in the first place, I thought that was actually a damn good idea for a story. But, you know, I just couldn't freaking follow along. It was so frustrating.
We did get lost a bit with the bit about the deeds at the end. All three of us that went were sort of scratching our heads a bit about it. But I think it was, you know, the twin stories are very clear. I thought it was very clear which story you were watching at any time and what was going on. I think the sliding doors thing is a clever idea for a musical. I think it worked.
Well, I guess, you know, it was just one of my thicko nights.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.